All right. Hello. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlawed Picks podcast. Today we are discussing UFC 289, just the main card, because we're both very busy. We've got a couple of sponsors for the podcast today, which I'm going to give a shout out. First of all, Old Faithful, Athletic Greens. It's with us on the channel as much as it is in our daily lives. You love this. You use this every day. You've already had yours before I even wake up in the morning.
Yes.
Right? Tell me the benefits. Tell me how you feel different from using this, because they hear from me all the time.
So before I do that.
Okay.
Okay. I woke up this morning and I was looking for the Athletic Green bag and I haven't found it. Right. So I'm like, oh, I don't have any more. So I checked the box. Oh, you know where I'm going with this. I checked the box and I only see the travel packs. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll use a travel pack. I shouldn't be using this because I'm not traveling. This is the misuse of it. And then I start watching The War Room for Kai Kara France and Amir Albazi.
Well, at least you watched The War Rooms. That's good news.
But I noticed that you had the bag in here.
They do sponsor the show. I mean,
yeah. We'll use these because I've run out.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing is I went and grabbed the bag because it's just nice to have a nice new crisp bag, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, also nice to use it though.
I know. Well, you can, there you go, have it.
Yeah, no, thank you.
You can have it now, fine. My goodness.
Thank you.
It
so
is
you
really
can tell
good stuff.
That I use it when I noticed that you didn't have it.
Well, you could. I mean, it was fair to use the travel pack because you did travel around the house looking for the bag. So, I mean,
yeah, I did.
So basically, you've got to use this stuff. You mix it with 12 ounces of water every morning, and I'm going to go back to the flavor because, like, people always think that this tastes terrible because it's green, and it doesn't. I've had green drinks before, and they do taste bad. And what would you say to your sister? Because you know exactly what your sister would say.
Listen, it's good. Just try it. No, but for real, like, so I like it especially in the morning because I can get up and have that. Sometimes I feel like water is a bit abrasive as soon as I wake up, and that's like a good, like, sliding into water and then coffee.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's good stuff.
Yeah,
really
no,
good stuff.
I honestly really like how it tastes. I can't speak any more highly of it because I really do love it. I really do love it every day since, and I started with during training camp and I haven't stopped since then, and it's just been great. I feel great all the time now, and that's something I didn't used to feel so much. Like sometimes I feel a little bit sluggish, and I've noticed a difference, especially because I've been very consistent with it.
Yeah.
And I feel that's also a key, right? You're not going to do something once or twice and expect massive results. You have to be consistent with it.
All the way through training camp, you were diligent
about
it.
And with these, vitamin D drops, it's been great as well because you don't need a lot, and I don't necessarily like pills. I don't like the taste of it, and just like my stomach isn't great. And you literally only need one drop. You don't even realize, and that's your daily serving already.
There we go. So if you use our code, so if you go to athleticgreens.com/outlawed, you can get 5 free travel packs and a year's free supply of vitamin D3 and K2. All you have to do is go to athleticgreens.com/outlawed. It is fantastic stuff. 75 vitamins and minerals, probiotics, adaptogens, all different kinds of things that are just going to make you feel much better all the way through the day. So a shout out to Athletic Greens, our friends AG1, and our other friends over at Outlaw Rum. I do love a dash of this. So this, I was thinking about this as I was walking through to the studio with the bottle, thinking to myself, well, this is kind of a complete, you know, start your day with this and end your day with this. It's like, it's just got a nice balance to it. Outlaw Rum, you've got to check this stuff out. It is top class, top quality. We went up to the distillery, didn't we? We're not going to tell you where it is. It's top secret. But the wizardry that they are going through to distill this stuff is amazing. And they've always got stuff. They've always got new twists and turns on the original. So make sure you check out this Outlaw Rum. I am going to have a little dash while we do the podcast today. Okay, shall we talk about first fight on the main card?
Yes.
So they are different. According to UFC stats and Wikipedia, they are both different. But we're going to start with Marc-Andre Barrio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where is my UFC stats? There we go. See, so I was having a bit of a look down this card. It's not the most star-studded of pay-per-views.
No, but I think because since it's in Vancouver, they have a lot of Canadian fighters. And they focused more on filling it up with Canadian fighters than it being a pay-per-view, I believe.
For sure. But then, like, if you look at how they're matched, like, this first one that we're talking about is just great matchmaking. So Marc-Andre Barrio against Eric Anders. So we've got 15-6 with one no contest for Barrio and 15-7 with one no contest for Eric Anders. Both of them are 6 foot one. Eric Anders has a 1-inch reach advantage. Southpaw v. Orthodox. You've got like an endurance athlete against a power athlete.
Yeah.
Like Marc-Andre Barrio, is he nicknamed the Power Bar?
Power Bar,
like,
yes.
He just doesn't slow down. He's just in your face, neckties, uppercuts, brawling, making it just aggressive and untidy. And then you've got Eric Anders, who was he assigned to the Cleveland Browns? Mm. Like he's a very, very good athlete. And you can tell when he moves, he's got that quick twitch athletic ability.
Yeah,
like,
explosiveness.
Even in his footwork against Daukus, where he was like just stepping and like pivoting out of the way, you can tell that he's just got a good command of his body. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like this is like one's gonna start well and one's gonna finish well. Does that make sense?
So you think Eric Anders is going to start well, and then Barrio? Yeah.
If he doesn't stop Barrio, he's gonna be drowned by him in the third round. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I can see that because it was Eric Anders. I'm like, I saw him when he fought Jan Blachowicz.
Yeah.
And I remember that being. Just, no, it wasn't Jan Blachowicz. It was Thiago Santos.
Right, yeah.
And that just being like the overall feel of the fight, because it was by retirement, and he was just exhausted.
Oh, that was where he couldn't get up, wasn't it?
Yeah, so he was exhausted. And when he fought against Young Yao Park, on a fight that I think that he should have...
Young Yao
Park. Yeah, I think he should have won that fight.
I was on comms for that, wasn't I?
No.
Oh, no, that was... But Barrio fought Young Yao Park, didn't he? I've definitely called one of Junyon Park's fights.
Yeah, no, but he fought Eric Anders. the scream he did when he won, it was pretty funny. just go watch that. It was hilarious. But it's always like towards the end that you see Eric Anders kind of start to slow down and really just wing shots more and more desperately go to go from striking to clinch work up against the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I feel like Barrio can... probably get a necktie and go up with and with the elbows, because that is what Park did to him towards the end, especially the third round.
Yeah.
So that's something that's gonna really, you know, help him out.
He was doing that with Marquez a lot, wasn't he? Holding him in the back of the head and smashing him with elbows. He also landed that up elbow a couple of times, which is nice.
With that fight should have been stopped. So
yeah,
like
yeah, should have won my Stop the Fight T-shirt. Yeah, for sure. I was watching that thinking to my... And you know what was interesting? I won't mention his name, but we could see one of the judges through the fence. And he's like, this can be done whenever you like. You know what I mean? It was just...
Marquez's like mouthpiece went out and everything. And it's just like, well, nah.
Yeah, I think he swung back once, maybe twice in like 70 punches.
It's like, why'd you swing back that one time, bro? You just prolonged
that. Made it an extra like 90 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I like Barrio. I like watching him. He's just a... You know what you're going to get with him. He's like a... He kind of goes in that Ed Herman, Sam Alvey bracket, but he's a bit more technical.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know that he's going to give you hell, no matter who you are in the division. He's going to... I think he was a two-weight champion in
TKO.
TKO,
yeah, in the Canadian organization.
Yeah. Welterweight as well, I think. Mm. I think it was welterweight and middleweight. Anyway, like I just think this is a really well-matched fight because there's so many similarities with the way that they fight. But then the differences is what's going to make the difference in the fight. Like is it going to be the speed and the footwork of Eric Anders, or will that eventually get worn down? Because like when he was being forced to grapple against Darren Stewart, he started to look more tired than I thought he should. And I didn't feel like he looked like that against... Daukus. He didn't look tired. He looked sharp all the way through that.
Well, he looked a lot more in shape.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I went back and saw, you know, like a bunch of his fights, and you could see that in the Daukus fight, he was in a lot more, like, in a lot better shape.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot leaner. Mm. And he had mentioned that versus Park, he didn't put enough pressure, and he felt like that's why he didn't get the nod Felt like he could have done a little bit more and that would have given him the win instead of a split decision loss.
Yeah.
So maybe he came with that in mind to come in and just utilize that more. One thing that he did really cool was when he fought Moreira, Vinicius Moreira.
That was a disgusting knockout.
Yes.
That was like the thudding into the canvas because his head had nowhere to go.
But it was just before that when he defended the single leg.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you do that, like that side sort of butt grab.
Yeah, and he just kind of spun him around.
Yeah, and then he was able to like put him against the fence and land those shots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's like a weird one to drill. Because anytime like the coach shows that, it's just like, don't be shy.
Hey, but if it works.
That's how you're going to defend this takedown.
If getting out of this position means you're not going to get it taken down, you've got to put your finger in their ass to do it. Do you want to be a fucking fighter, as Uncle Fester would say? So Barrio with his clinch elbows, I think, are going to be really useful. He had a really nice guillotine against what's his name as well, the tall kid that's been released.
One with the
mad padded.
I saw.
He was the one
that
had the really padded record. Do you remember? Like the early fights he'd fought, like
Wright, was it Wright?
Yes, Jordan Wright.
Yes,
yeah, and that was actually his first submission of his record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's got
10 that.
Knockouts out of 15 wins. But that was a lovely guillotine as well. See, this is the thing, right? So, say for example. Marc-Andre Barrio comes out and in the first round he's just kind of absorbing strikes and he's like, you know, trying to stay safe and he's like, you know, Eric Anders, he's bursting and trying to sprint and like, you know, having moments where he feels like he's landing good shots. Because like that's the thing with Marc-Andre Barrio is I think a lot of people and Marquez was doing this as well. They rev the engine a bit too much because they feel like they're landing good shots.
Yeah.
And then they start to feel a bit tired and then all of a sudden the guy's still there and he's bloody and he's moving forward. Like, I can see that happening. And I can see Eric Anders then wanting to clinch him and hold him up against the fence so he's not getting elbowed in the face. And that's
and then
where...
him going... Pfft.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing is, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Eric Anders' level change to try and get a grip around his waist to pull him off the fence. And that's where he's going to be vulnerable to those guillotines, especially if he's really tired by the time he's trying to get the fight to the floor.
Yeah, it was really nice because Wright was going for that high crotch and then he's seeing the guillotine and he went off at an angle. But that angle was what allowed him to kind of block with the other leg to not let him roll.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he rolled over to mount, you could see that it wasn't locked in a figure four, but it was just like a figure four lock. So he had really clamped but made the adjustments as the thing was going. Mm. And he knows that position is good for him. And yeah, he's known as a cardio machine. Has really good lean back to lead hand, uh-huh. like a lead hook. That's really nice of him when he does. And what's crazy is that submission came 2 months after that knockout versus Chidi.
Oh, Chidi Njikwani, yeah.
He just kicked from cold right in front mm-hmm. of him, and he just jabbed him, touched him with the other hand, which is the type of power that Eric Anders possesses. Yeah, but it's...
Anders only got one submission on his record, though, only from like way back in his career.
Hmm.
He made his pro debut against someone called Josh Raspberry. Another cheerful
name. There we go with the weird
names. I know, I love a weird name. It's Josh Raspberry. Rinicky choke in his fourth fight. 30 seconds into the fight, but he's had no submission since, and he's had a lot of he's had a lot of split decisions. Like if you look through just since he joined the UFC, split decision loss to Machida, split decision loss to Elias Theodoro, split decision win over Mershart, split decision loss to Jun Yong Park. It's like he's almost. You know what I mean? I feel like that's why I feel like this is really about how much impact he can have in the first sort of round and a half before Barrio starts hanging on him with that single necktie and cracking him in the face with elbows.
Yeah.
And it starts to get sloppy in the favor of Marc-Andre Barrio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which way are you going?
Yeah, I think Barrio.
Yeah, I think so.
By decision, though, I don't think it's going to be a stoppage. I just think it's going to be one of these like... Because I think Anders is going to come in really good shape like he did for the Daukus fight. But it's still... Because Barrio doesn't really look like he's that physically...
No. I mean, he's
big. Like fit?
Yeah.
Like he has abs, but you can't tell that he has abs. Does that make sense?
He's not as lean as Eric Anders. But then
maybe that's why he can cushion block everything.
Yeah, that's why I don't necessarily think that being as lean as Eric Anders was in the Daukus fight is good for him. Because like there's a point where like guys with a little bit of extra body fat, they just seem to be able to kind of push forward and absorb, and you know what I mean? I do think there's some benefit to it. I think being too lean means that you've got too much muscle at the weight class, and that is why some fighters get tired.
Yeah. But then, like with Anders.
Yeah. I also think it's down to, you know, your body type, and I do think Marc-André Barrio is a plodder. He wears people down, you know.
Yeah,
I'm going with Barrio.
Same.
Yeah. I think there's a hidden advantage here, given the fact that it's in Canada as well.
Yeah, like you know, he's gonna push extra hard in every training session. Like, I can't look bad, and he's probably gonna be like, in Canada, that's where I did my best work because of the TKO. So this is where I stand. That's for sure.
I think I've cornered in that arena. I think the last time I cornered before UFC London, in fact, was in that arena with Mac Danzig. Okay, next fight. Dan Ige against Nate Landwehr. Another really good fight that kind of is not really going to cause a great deal of conversation amongst the fans. It's not like, oh hell, have you seen that fight? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see.
But in actuality, if you kind of get into the nuts and bolts of it, it's another really interesting fight. Another one that's like well matched. So Dan Ige, 16-6. Nate Landwehr, 17-4. There's a 2-inch height advantage for Landwehr and a 1-inch reach advantage for him. The problem with Dan Ige is you know that he has to get close. He's got no game on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Even his boxing range is shorter than it needs to be for his arm length.
Yeah,
like he's only got a 1-inch reach disadvantage here, but he's gonna have to be a lot closer to Landwehr to land anything than Landwehr is, because he's quite good at extending himself and throwing that long rear kick. And
then he kind of like goes up with the kick as well.
Yeah,
it's a little bit.
He landed it a few times though. Was it against Austin Lingo?
Yes.
Like he jabbed him in the stomach a few times with it. I thought that was quite a useful weapon that he could use in this one.
He has a good like teep to the body.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that I saw him in doing one of his fights. He like teeped to the body a few times, and then he lifted up the knee like he was going to teep, and he came with the backhand.
Yeah,
and that's how he got a knockdown, I believe.
Mm.
Yeah, that was nice from him. He looks a little bit like Paul Felder from the side, though.
He does look a little bit like Paul Felder,
but not like normal Paul Felder, like triathlete Paul Felder.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, you know. That's a well-conditioned athlete.
Yeah. So ultra-conditioned.
I've said this before, I think. I think he looks like one of the ghouls off that video game, that Fallout video game. Maybe I just played it too much, but he does. I think it'd be a good nickname for him, the ghoul.
The ghoul.
The ghoul.
Yeah, but he has the train tattooed.
Who does? Landwehr?
Yeah.
Does he really? Yeah.
Yeah, have you seen it? Dear. It's on his side. It just says the train at like... At just an...
Maybe,
if you have OCD, that will not help you.
Maybe you can have it. Maybe you can have it like adapted to like train hard. Train hard, strike first, no mercy. There you go. It could be
train hard, strike first, yeah, no mercy.
That's Cobra Kai, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you doing the next Under Armour shoe? Blood, sweat, respect.
Oh yeah, they are bad.
They're horrible.
They are terrible. So I'm
getting distracted.
Dan Ige, 5 knockouts and 5 submissions on his record. 3 rear naked chokes, a kimura, and an armbar. For whatever reason, I always look at Nate Landwehr and think to myself, he looks like a wrestler. And he's actually not. Like, he has wrestled, but the majority of his time he spends striking. And I feel like there's a... Because he is quite hittable. I feel like Dan Ige can get close to him and can land.
Yeah.
But I also feel like there's a predictability to Dan Ige's game that he could... He could pay for in this one. Like, I don't know. I just feel like Dan Ige, especially after that 3-fight losing streak that he had.
There's just a lot more to study from him because of the amount of main events.
Yeah.
That he had, and you know, like.
And that fight against Ivlev was just exhausting for him. So he was taken down 9 out of 16 attempts. He never quit, but you could just. It just looked exhausting for him.
But he does have power, like Gavin. Gavin Tucker.
Yeah.
Like charged in and he got caught with that straight right hand from Dan Ige.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I think overall aggressive, but I see what you mean about him having to be really close because he lands body shots and he like punch guard punch, which kind of gets people out of like the rhythm because it's not in sync. They mm-hmm. expect punch, 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 maybe some sort of break and then another punch. But yeah. since he goes and he uses that guard to cover and step through a little bit more, I feel like that off-timing beat gets his opponents off guard.
Yeah, yeah. He does tend to kind of punch and then hang for a second before going again.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the knockout that he landed against Jackson was really nice. He throws his left hook a lot like Frankie Edgar does. And he's another fighter that throws short punches even though he's got short arms.
Yeah.
Like it's Sean Sherk was the same. Like he's got this like really short like drag left hook where he keeps his elbow down. And I mean, it worked. It was lovely against Jackson. He went to the body first and then up to the head. The problem with that is just you just have to be so close to your opponents to land.
Yeah, and he landed that because Jackson was going for a rear uppercut.
Yeah.
And it's great punch if the person's going that way. But if, you know, if something's coming around from the top, like you're quite exposed in that area.
Yeah. I think if I was Ige, I'd come into this one and aim to do as much damage to that lead leg as land where as I could. Because he loves to pick it up and kind of threaten with it all the time. And like one of the things that I thought Ige did well against Emmett was working his lead leg because Emmett stands so heavy on his lead leg.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I feel like it could have been more of his game plan in that fight, to be honest. But yeah, and as far as the grappling goes, I mean, I might be surprised, but Dan Ige may decide he wants to close Nate Landwehr down in this one.
Yeah, and take it to the ground because he has good like ground and pound to rear naked choke finishes.
Yeah, he just doesn't come up well on the stats.
Yeah.
So we've got 86% takedown defense for Nate Landwehr and 1.4 submission average per 15 minutes and 26% takedown accuracy for Dan Ige. 52% takedown defense though is not bad considering the people that he's fought. Mm. I mean, 9 of 16 takedowns. So what's that? So he stopped 7 of them. It's not bad. It's not bad considering how good wrestling Evloev is.
Well,
go on.
Sorry. What one thing that I found really cool about Nate is two of his losses have been by knees,
mm-hmm.
which have been horrible, like with Burns or with Erosa.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a flying knee or him coming because. Versus Burns, he was just putting on pressure and making it a little bit of an ugly fight. And he just tie clinched and went knee up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And with Erosa, he had him hurt and then he did a flying knee. But after that fight, when he fought Klein, Ludovic Klein, which I think has really good striking.
He's a really good fighter. Yeah.
Yeah, he's
another one that looks too lean for the weight class and seems to slow down.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You know? But that happened a little bit with like Sabit as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think he was in the wrong weight class to get to do 5 rounds.
Mm.
He was, what, 6'3", 6'2". Anyway, carry on.
So he learned from that, and he started to incorporate knees in that fight. And one thing that I saw that I thought was really clever was when he had him up against the fence, right, he dug Klein was going in on his hips, right, and he dug double unders, but he had a wrap over the head. And then he started to throw knees, so Klein put his hand down so you can't get kneed in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he transitioned to an anaconda grip.
Was that the one that he didn't get? Because he had one in the second that was close, wasn't it?
That's the one that he didn't get. But it was just that putting his opponent in the dilemma where I'm kneeing you in the head, now you have to put your hand down or attack this grip.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you put the hand down, you notice I can't knee to the head anymore. I'm going to switch to this grip because of the way you're leaning forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool from him to do.
Which way are you going? I kind of feel like Landwehr is going to do it. My concern for Dan Ige, and there were a couple of times he walked onto it against Evloev as well. Evloev kept jumping up with that knee. And Dan Ige is not the tallest of fighters, and he kind of stands low as well. Low and has to get close to strike. I can see Landwehr catching him with knees and hurting him.
Just like slugfessing it out type of.
Yeah.
I think like these 3 fights are just...
They're just bangers. They really are. Like the next one as well, Mike Malott against Adam Fugit.
They're really like flip of the coin, because and even if you look at their record, it's almost like identical.
Yeah,
all of them have an identical type of record to where, yeah, the like the difference is slightly a little bit more here or a little bit more there, but.
Mm-hmm. Which way you go?
Let me think about it one more second.
I'm gonna go Landwehr. Yeah. I think Nate Landwehr is going to do it. I think his front kicks to the midsection, his knees are going to be a problem. And I think he's just better at using range than Dan Ige is. I think Dan's very good, but he's just not doesn't have the physical attributes in any range really to better this division, if that makes sense. Like I kind of feel like
Do you think he's like a bantamweight?
No, I just kind of feel like we've seen the best of him in this division. You know, the run that he's had. I don't know what he's gonna have to do to be better than that, and I don't know if he's gonna be able to. Like, he would need to develop a longer range game for a start, and I just don't see it.
But Danny has way better like boxing striking than Nate.
Yeah, for sure. But he has to get close to him to do it, and I just feel like Landwehr's tougher and more durable and more willing to stand in the pocket and trade. Get bloody, make it a mess. I don't know. I would like to see Dan Ige win and go on another run, but I just don't know. I just feel like he's we've probably seen his level.
Okay, I'll go Dan Ige.
Okay. Like I said, I'm hopeful for him, but I don't know. I feel like he's. Like those, like you've got to look at those three losses. I mean, four if you're including the Calvin Kattar one. Like that's five fives, unanimous decision loss. Then five fives against Korean Zombie. Then 2 3-5 minute round losses to Emmett and Ivloev. And in between that, he's got a 22-second over Gavin Tucker, and then that last fight against Damon Jackson, which was weird with the whole eye poking and stuff. And it wasn't really. I mean, it was the palm of his glove. Like yeah. You can see as he pushed away, his hand was open, but it was just a bit of a weird fight, just the whole thing. And I don't, yeah.
But you don't think all those guys that he lost to, Nate would lose to?
Yeah, potentially. Potentially, for sure. I'm not saying that, yeah, no, for sure. But
like, I can see Ivloev beating Nate, and
I can see Ivloev beating everybody in the division.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about that. It's more about the limitations that I saw in his game against all three of those. Like, I actually thought he looked better against Ivloev than he did against the other guys, but I think that's because he'd accepted he was going to get taken down. So he like charged at him a couple of times and landed some shots. Whereas Jung and Emma, I just feel like they kind of cooked him, and he never changed his style in that fight.
Yeah.
That's my thought. Yeah, I'm sticking with my pick. I'm still sticking with Landwehr. And he looks like a ghoul. So I'm gonna have to show you what it is. You don't know. You don't know the video game, but I'll have to show you what it is.
I can't imagine it being something nice to look at. Ghoul.
Ghoul. No, it was like post-apocalyptic, kinda the half humans, half, you know, nuclear wasteland kinda residents of Fallout. Well, you know it, Fallout, don't you, Jamie? Yeah.
How do you spell it?
Oh, it's don't matter now. Come on, let's move on. Right. Yeah. Mike Malott against Adam Fugit. Fugit. Not Fugit.
Why are you taking it from
not,
me?
This is not a keeping up appearances kind of situation. We're in last name's Bucket and she says it's Bouquet. Adam Fugit. I don't know.
Oh, no, this is the one that looks like Seidenfelder.
Who does?
Fugit.
No, I would say Nate Landwehr does much more.
No, on this last fight, well, you could put in the comments who looks more Seidenfelder.
Is that a thing? Seidenfelder.
If I made eyebrow advantage a thing, I could make Seidenfelder a thing.
That's very true. Seidenfelder's got a very flat nose, which is why I thought Nate Landwehr looks more like him Seidon. Okay, let me quick get the stats up for this one. So, yeah, this is an interesting one. I actually went back and watched Fugit's last fight. Was it LFA before he came to the UFC?
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Like 20 high kicks. Straight away. kick, a front kick, a front kick, a body kick.
Yeah, there were six back-to-back high kicks.
And he was going kick to punch, kick to punch, kick to punch, and then a little check right hook. Mm-hmm. Kind of similar to the one that Nunes was using against Peña in their last fight. That little check right hook from Southpaw. So 9-1-1 for Mike Malott. And 9-3 for Adam Fugit. I am making an effort to get that name right. Both of them are 6-1, but Fugit has a 4-inch reach advantage. And this is Southpaw v. Orthodox. Although I have seen Mike Malott switch in stance. He does switch, doesn't
he? Yeah, he starts Southpaw and then like 2 minutes in switches.
Yeah.
I think it's more like, I'm going to confuse my opponent. They're going to, you know, train for me to be a Southpaw, then I'm going to switch it up.
Hey, it worked. It worked for Nunes against Peña. As soon as she went back to her corner at the end of the first round, I'm going to jump in ahead now. But that, like, that was straight away. That was the first thing they addressed. It's like, okay, when she goes Southpaw, we'll just do, I can't remember who she said, there was a particular game plan that they were using against somebody else that was Southpaw that she'd fought. Anyway, I'll come to it when we get into that fight. This, I think, is going to be a really interesting scrap because I think there are a lot of high hopes around Mike Malott. That guillotine that he got on Contenders was really nice. But yeah, Fugit, he always seems to me like he's always counted out. Like he was a massive underdog in that fight.
Yeah, but he's always been given like pretty crappy fights in terms of like when he fought Michael Morales, right? One of the youngest and like brightest prospect, especially in like South American prospects, huge prospects. Then he fought Kinoshita, and then it was on the road to UFC, which was it was a strange card because it was a UFC card, but it was the tournament finales of every like of Asia UFC competition. And the guy he fought had a really good slide back rear hand, which is what Morales was catching him on. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, let's put him against this guy so he can get like a backhand knockout on the record. And he was like, flipped it on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question is, what does Mike Malott look like under pressure? Because he's looked very slick so far, but Mickey Gall put him under a bit of pressure, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't look nearly as slick or nearly as comfortable when he was under that kind of pressure. And I don't feel like there's any other way that he's going to, Fugit's going to fight. He's aggressive, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's going to come out, he's going to have a high volume of something that he's decided is going to be his main game plan. And he's going to force it onto his opponent for 3 rounds. Like Mike to me looks like he needs a bit of space to work sometimes. He looks like he's like he's quite slick and he likes to admire his work a little bit. He's quite posed in the way, even his topology picture is the same. I just kind of felt like he was very kind of posed in everything that he does, whereas Fugit on the other side, he's like, right, okay, what can I hit you with next?
I'm wreck you.
Yeah, it's just a little bit, you know, a little bit more kind of forthright and to the point. That guillotine, what was it? What was his opponent's name? Smotritsky?
Yeah, that Nate Diaz type of guillotine.
Yeah, that was sick. And then on the outside, you've got Uriah Faber over Dana's shoulder. He's like, sign him, he's good, sign him.
Because it isn't Mike Malott one of the coaches?
Oh, is he a coach there?
I don't know if he's a coach. Yeah, because I saw something of him coaching quite a bit and being in corners.
Yeah.
And then when he got his shot to
They said it on the commentary, didn't they? Like, has he not cornered like 17 UFC fights before his debut like or something mm-hmm. like that? Yeah.
So he's always been like in the corner and in the gym, and it shows that he went... And he really developed his grappling during mm-hmm. that time because, you know, it was coaching and all of this. And you can see really slick. Like, when he got that arm triangle, what was impressive is that he pulled back and adjusted several times. Mm-hmm. He, like, jerked it to get under the chin. And most people, when they go for an arm triangle, they have it a little bit too high and then they squeeze to death.
Yeah. gas himself out.
Yeah, and they do. And the other person's like, this really hurts, but I'm not going to get subbed.
Yeah.
But when he just went down, I think he went down like 3 times. And then he got his, like shoulder right here. You're just like, oh, that's done.
Mm.
That's done.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit like his muscle mass works against him in the striking, though. Like, you don't feel like he's
slows
a little,
him down a bit.
Yeah, like he looks like a little bit stiff because he's so muscular.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. He just seemed quite tightly wound to me. Like he's got good lateral movement and he's got nice feints. That's why I kind of feel like it again, it's a bit like the Barrio Anders fight. I don't feel like he can maintain that kind of fast twitchiness, like that tension for the whole 15 minutes. And I feel like Fugit can just kind of, if he can, like, it wouldn't surprise me if Fugit throws kicks because he throws a lot of left kicks. It wouldn't surprise me if he throws that kick over and over again and gets dropped, gets knocked down. If he loses the round or maybe he has to defend some submissions. But if he does get into the later rounds of having defended his neck, has he ever been submitted before, Fugit? Like if he's, do you know what I mean? Like if I feel like he can just kind of tough it out and get through the first sort of 5 minutes where most likely he's going to have to deal with the best of Mike Mallott's game.
Mm-hmm.
He was subbed by Maximov by guillotine in a
grappling match.
I actually watched Mike Mallott against Trevin Giles in a grappling match.
Mm.
Yeah, that was very good. I rather enjoyed it. Very, very offensive jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Constantly kept trying to pull him over him and sweep to him to try and get to his back. Which way are you going?
Which way are you going?
I kind of feel like Mike Mallott's going to do it. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I want to pick Adam Fugit because I just always feel like he's the underdog and he's like the odds are stacked against him and he's always got somebody in front of him that he's supposed to lose to.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like Mike Mallott is, I don't know, he's looking sharp at the moment.
Yeah, he is.
He's looking. I can see Fugit being too hittable when he's throwing kicks, too adamant to throw his left kick,
mm-hmm.
too hittable. Maybe he keeps getting knocked down. Maybe he gets knocked down and Mike Mallott follows him to the floor.
Yeah.
Works to pass his guard, starts looking for that arm triangle.
Because like what helped Fugit in his last fight versus Yusaku,
mm-hmm.
yeah, was that in the grappling exchange, he was a lot better. In the wrestling grappling, he was able to get that like brief break from getting hurt to, okay, now I'm switching on to the grappling area. And when you're fighting Mike Mallott, you're just like, I'm going to have to strike.
Yeah.
Basically, because this guy's grappling is, I would say, his strong suit. Although Mike Mallott did start in Taekwondo in 2006.
Did he? Yeah.
Yeah, then he moved to kickboxing, then wrestling, and then finally MMA.
Nice. A little step back that he did against Mickey Gore was nice. That was a short left hook as well, wasn't it? Was he southpaw? And Mickey Gore was moving forward and he kind of stepped back to orthodox. Right hand, left hook.
Yeah. Yeah, he uses a lot of feints as well.
Yeah,
and
he does.
And I think with the feints, he's going to be able to get like Fugit to show his cards or start something, and then he can counter on those things.
Keep getting to throw that kick and then moving out the way of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which way are you going?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Mallott.
Mike Mallott, yeah. Okay, right. Co-main event. This is where it starts to feel like a pay-per-view. So. Oh, what a fight this is. So
Ollie.
I've already done a war room for this, by the way. The war room will be up very soon, won't it, Jamie? And after this, we are going to record the war room for the main event as well. So that will be up soon as well. Charles Oliveira against Benil Dariush. So 33-9 with one no contest for Charles Oliveira, 22-4-1 for Benil Dariush. Both 5'10", although I still feel like Charles Oliveira is going to look bigger. He's going to look taller. He's going to look bigger. He's got a 2-inch reach advantage. Having said that, the more I've watched and researched this, the more I'm feeling like Benil Dariush might surprise a few people here.
Yeah. You know why? Because Mythical Fighter, Salt and Pepper Benny.
Is that right?
Because look, in the beginning of his UFC, he was having issues because his hair was, just black, right? Dark.
Right.
But when he started to get that salt and pepper look, then he was unstoppable.
Are you saying I should come out of retirement? I've actually got a gray hair in one of my eyebrows. That's a first, honestly. Gray hair in one of my eyebrows. I got a few down the sides to start with.
Then I've got
all these coming in. But yeah, literally, first gray hair in my eyebrow.
Salt and pepper, Dan Hardy. There we go.
I just hope that these gray eyebrow hairs keep growing like the old Kung Fu masters. Mm. So they go really long down the sides. I kind of braided into the rest of my hair. Mm. Shaolin shadow boxing. Okay. Where are we with this one? So Benil Dariush, of course, has been chasing an opportunity like this for some time. He's looked very, very impressive in his last few fights, in particular his last one against Mateusz Gamrot, who you've trained with him. I've always been a fan of Gamrot. A very, very difficult person to deal with. Excellent wrestling, constantly shooting and reshooting, as well as chaining all kinds of submissions on the end of it. I was not expecting Benil Dariush to be able to shut him down as well as he did.
Man, the way he got off to the side, and when he went, when he hooked the leg of Mateusz and then went with his like front leg, I'm explaining this horribly, and he went kind of into like a crucifix from this area and just folded him over, because his head, with his body being here, kind of like stuffed his head at the same time, and he was just like crunched badly. And I love the going for leg locks to create scrambles and, mm-hmm. and just transitions. I think it was beautiful, but just how he was able to go to the side when takedowns were coming and create that angle, kind of like what you were talking about, the butt defense.
Yeah. I was really, really impressed with him. So he stopped 79% of takedowns against Gamrot, 15 of 19. He stopped. Just really impressive. And I kind of feel like Charles Oliveira I think we've seen the best portion of his career. And I hate to say that, but I kind of feel like we have. Like, the thing is, like, Gaethje put him down a few times. It's not like Gaethje, Poirier, or Chandler wouldn't feel like they could definitely beat him if they fought him again. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were very impressive performances, but every single one of them would think, God, just give me another opportunity and I'll beat him, right? And then Makhachev comes out, puts him down when he's being reckless, because that's always been the concern with Charles. Like, he's got such a good ground game that he doesn't really mind how he ends up on the floor. So he'll like leap in, he'll throw skip knees and flying knees and stuff and be reckless. And there's a lot of fighters in this division that won't play those games. Mm-hmm. And Benil Dariush is one of those fighters. Like, you can get Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier to play reckless. We know Chandler can get reckless. Makhachev's not going to get reckless. And Dariush is not going to get reckless either. And I think that might be the kryptonite for him, is someone that won't scrap.
Yeah, because all those fighters that you mentioned, like Gaethje, Chandler, they all like... A little bit of like just bleed type of fighters.
Yeah,
that
you
they
can draw him in a little bit. Yeah, for sure. Well, I just don't. And the other thing as well, we got to remember is the opportunity that Dariush has got. It's been such a long time coming to get a fight like this. Like Gamrot, of course, he's a big opportunity, but this is the first time he's getting the opportunity to fight a former champion.
Yeah, but Gamrot wasn't an opportunity for him. It was an opportunity for Gamrot.
Potentially, yeah. Potentially, for sure. Yeah. Like, they've not made it at all easy for him to get anywhere near the title.
No,
and he's earned it based on his hard work and his wins and his determination to get there. But that also means that he's going to take this opportunity really, really seriously, because he's going to treat this like it's a title shot.
Yeah, well, like, he was the backup for the main event supposedly, and then they switched it on him.
Yeah.
I'd be so mad.
Yeah. Go on.
What's cool about him is the way he utilizes his kicks. Like, he really just goes hard on them. Like, sort of Cejudo versus Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cejudo just went full force to the leg kicks, tried to take away his legs. And he did that versus Chiesa, for example. Mm-hmm. And that was working really well. And that's the only submission loss that he has, which, was... He went for a takedown towards Chiesa. Yeah, Dariush went for the takedown, and then Chiesa like turned it on him and then got his back. And it was weird because it didn't look like he was all the way in. It looked like more of a face crank.
Well, it's listed as a neck crank. It was more of an injury than a choke, for sure. Yeah. I for me, Dariush is going to make better decisions in this one than Charles Oliveira. And Charles Oliveira is not going to come in against Dariush with any of the same kind of concern that I think he would have against some of the fights in this division.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like if I'm Charles Oliveira, I'm looking at Dariush and thinking, well, I'm a better grappler and I'm a better striker, so I'll beat him everywhere. And I think that he loses it in the decision-making. I think Dariush isn't as reckless, so lands better shots. We know he's got heavy hands when he does land cleanly. And I think he makes better decisions based on his ability to choose whether it goes to the floor or not.
Yeah.
Like, he's got better wrestling than Charles Oliveira, unless there's a big evolution in Charles's wrestling game, which I'm not expecting. I think Dariush can force it into a striking match, and then Charles starts to get reckless because he's got no plan. Then he starts to get hit and hurt.
Yeah.
Like, we might see Dariush just calling him back to his feet over and over again each time he gets dropped. But I feel like Charles Oliveira is kind of... He might just be running out of road at this weight class. I know you've mentioned before about him moving up to welterweight, because he did kind of run into a wall at featherweight when he was struggling with the weight.
Yeah, and like, I don't want fight week to see you on the Tuesday with your whole team around you and you're in a sauna or like covered in towels.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that on a Tuesday, man. Yeah.
The benefit is this is only three rounds, though, so at least he's not at least he didn't have to maintain it for 25 minutes.
Yeah, I can see that. What is cool about Dariush's is striking is you called it on the Camacho fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he went uppercut to side to the punch to side left hand to another left hand. You were like, oh, that was like really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally cut John off. You're like, okay, listen, the fight's going on over here.
Was it a sponsor read? Did I cut him off on a sponsor?
No, I don't think it was a sponsor. I think it was just he was like trying to talk about his life or something. It was like,
story time with John Gooden.
Yeah.
If the fight's going on and something exciting happens, I don't even notice. I can't even keep it together.
That's something that he does, though. He does dip his head to let for that overhand left to come. But that's how he got caught versus Hernandez.
Yeah.
A fight that he really shouldn't have lost.
Yeah. But I just don't feel like Charles Oliveira.
That was before Salt and Pepper.
Right,
Benny.
Okay.
See?
So what about Charles Oliveira and his bleached blonde hair then? I mean,
no, that's
better?
Over.
Salt and Pepper Benny or gold top Oliveira?
No, gold top is over now.
Is it?
Yeah. Once you get knocked down like eight times by each one of your opponents.
You know what would be really funny is if he comes in like with it dyed salt and pepper like Benil Dariush. I think that quite suits him, especially with those glasses that he wears. He looked like a computer programmer.
No, but for real, I do love Charles Oliveira. All his grappling is sick. His fights are always
for
sick.
For sure. Yeah, I've got the breakdown actually of his record here. So 33 wins, 9 wins by knockout, 21 wins by submission, 9 by rear naked choke, 5 by guillotine, 3 by anaconda, and the rest are arm bars and triangles. And then on the other side, you've got Benil Dariush, who's got 8 submissions on his record, but I haven't got them broken down. Let's have a quick look. Rear naked choke, triangle arm bar. And then, yeah, rear naked chokes, triangle arm bars back in his early career. An arm bar, rear naked chokes. It's the dominant submission.
Yeah.
Always is. Anybody that's got submissions on their record is almost always more than 50% rear naked chokes, is what I'm learning now. For real. It's like look at that. 21 submission wins on Oliveira's record, 9 by rear naked choke and 5 by guillotine. You know what I mean? It's just like...
He has like long arms.
Yeah, but I'm just saying just predominantly. Like it was the same for the other guys I was looking at earlier as well.
Are you upset? It's not like toe hold, crucifix,
no, it just
banana
shows you,
split.
Here we go. I mean, well, I'm not jumping the gun, but the main event, same thing, right? So you've got Aldana, who's got 3 submissions, 2 rear naked chokes and an armbar, and Nunes got 4 submissions, 3 rear naked chokes and a reverse triangle armbar. But if you look at the armbar from Aldana against Kohea and the reverse triangle armbar from Nunes against Megan Anderson, they'd have both been rear naked chokes if they got their way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like they were just like too high and then
yeah, they both fell off and turned mm-hmm. into something else. I'm just kind of reinforcing
the point. That was you not jumping the gun though, right?
I'm totally jumping the gun.
Ah, okay, okay.
I've got some interesting stats about their takedowns as well, but I'll get into that in a moment. Or maybe not at all. Maybe I'll just save it for the war room. So give me a scenario where Charles Oliveira wins.
This is how I see the fight playing in my head.
Okay.
It starts, right? And Charles Oliveira is doing his thing. He's thrown like 8 switch jumping knees, mm-hmm. 3 front kicks. And during one of these, Benil Dariush catches him with the left hand, bam, knocks him down. He's like, come on to my guard. And Benil's like, I'm gonna think about it. Maybe I'll knock you down a few more times. So he tells him to get up. And then Charles Oliveira is just like, whatever. I didn't even remember I got punched. And Benil, you know, like tries to go for a takedown. Benil stuffs it. They get into a scramble, but Oliveira like sucks him in into, I don't know, half guard. Then he tries to go for his back. Benil rolls for a leg lock. And then Oliveira scrambles, catches a anaconda type thing, and mm-hmm. then they get back up and Oliveira throws some knees and they split in the break, and then Oliveira thinks, okay, you're gonna dip your head with this punch that you caught me with, knock me down, it's not gonna happen this time. So and he faints and he throws a flying knee and he gets a flying knee knockout.
Oliveira does,
yep,
from fainting and getting Benil Dariush to throw his left hand and dip his head. Yep. Okay, well there you go, you don't even need to watch it, you can just
If I watched that, what I just said, I'd be pretty happy. That sounded exciting.
If that happens exactly as that, then you are some kind of genius. That would
I'm
be
from
very
the
impressive.
Future. That's what it is. I wouldn't accept any other explanation. If you're just from the future, you came back and you just explained the fight, ruined it, spoiled it.
Right.
I'd never watch this again. Okay. Spoiler alert. So, Veronica from the future.
Right. Veronica from the future. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Charles Oliveira is going to win by flying knee knockout.
Yeah. But he's going to get dropped. There's going to be some crazy exchange on the ground.
Yeah.
Where he's going to be like, come here and, you know, like I'll octopus you up in here. Uh-huh. And then tries to go for something. Benil scrambles. Because Benil's very smart on the ground.
Very.
Very intelligent. It's not like he's just flow rolling and seeing how it goes. No. He knows exactly what he's doing at all times and how to stop what you're doing.
Yep.
So that's where I feel like it might be a little bit of an issue for Oliveira. Because although Oliveira is extremely skilled, sometimes I feel like he's waiting to see for an opportunity to then like attack it.
Yeah.
You know, full force, probably going to get it because his limbs really allow him to get a lot of, you know, he has good triangle type legs mm-hmm. and good or figure four with arms.
Yeah.
So that's, just great.
It's like that, that when he got that figure four, whatever it was. What's he called?
Oh, yeah,
it?
When he did this with the shoulder. Yeah, what's he
called it? Didn't he got a name for it? But it's basically like a figure four. He's doing rear naked choke, but his arms are long enough to go around the neck and arm of Brookins.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sits over him with his legs.
Yeah.
So it's like a, I don't know, it's got elements of Peruvian necktie in it. It's got elements of a anaconda in it. It's got elements of a rear naked choke in it. It's a very unusual position. And I couldn't do it with my arm length. Against people in my weight class, it's really quite impressive. I'm interested to see. I hope they do grapple. I'd be disappointed if we don't see them on the floor, but I feel like Dariush, especially after watching him against Gamrot, I feel like his wrestling's good enough to force it on the feet if he wants to.
Okay, here's another thing.
Go on then.
Gamrot likes to do takedowns really low. Like, he likes to just take your shoe and, you know, make you fly with it. But Oliveira, I feel like, does a lot more like body lock type of takedowns, like lift and throw.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that would be a difference? Because with Chiesa, now I properly remembered, he went for the takedown and Chiesa turned him on the fence. And instead of going that direction, he went the other direction
mm-hmm.
and then did like a sacrifice type of throw.
So maybe the benefit would be that if, as long as Charles is attached enough to him,
mm-hmm.
he'll be able to get into the floor. Regardless, even if he tries for a body lock trip reap takedown and ends up on the bottom position, at least he's there and he's got a better hold of Dariush as they hit the floor.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But I still feel like even if Dariush ends up in Charles Oliveira's guard, I feel like his jiu-jitsu is good enough to not get subbed by him.
Hmm.
Like I don't want to underestimate Beneil Dariush's jiu-jitsu anymore. And I feel like...
No, not under... Like, you can't underestimate his jiu-jitsu.
But I feel like people do. I feel like people do. And I think if you look at their records, he's got 8 subs on his record out of 22 wins. Charles Oliveira's got 21 subs on his record. He's got almost as many subs as Dariush has got wins. Like, I feel like most people are going to go, well, yeah, but it's Charles Oliveira. He's got the most submissions in the UFC. But in actuality, when it comes to MMA grappling, I feel like Beneil Dariush is better. Mm. And not necessarily because he's got a better skill set or better experience, but because he's just able to make better decisions.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, I do. Like, his focus in the fight seems to make the best decisions during the fight.
Yeah.
And not so much to... And maybe that's why he's not getting a title shot yet. Does that make sense?
Like, I just think it's because he doesn't move the needle, unfortunately for him.
But it's harder to move the needle when you make a lot of good decisions sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Because you don't. Yeah, because you don't have Darren Elkins kind of fights. Yeah,
that's why Chandler is fighting McGregor is going to make so much bank right now.
Yeah, because Chandler's going to put his chin on the line, and it's the same reason why you've got Poirier against Gaethje for the BMF belt. When in actuality, both of these guys have probably beat both of them.
Mm.
You know, so who's the real BMF? Well, the people that take mad chances and make the fans excited.
They should make it just a Just Bleed belt.
Just Bleed.
Just Bleed belt.
Sponsored by Power Slap. Okay, which way are you going?
I can't choose against my boy.
I know you can't.
No.
I
sorry.
Know you can't.
Oliveira.
I'll go logical pick, and I'm going to go Dariush.
Don't have a bad way.
Again,
oh my God.
I'm a big fan of Oliveira, but I can't underestimate Dariush anymore. And I feel like he's turned a corner, and I feel like Oliveira's turned downhill a little bit. I feel like we've seen him take too many punches in the past few fights that are going to have a lasting effect. And I don't think he's going to be nearly as durable against Beneil Dariush as we've seen him in the past. I think Dariush is going to hit him and hurt him and keep making him stand back up. And he might even try and make a point of going to the floor and beating him up there as well when he gets tired.
Yeah.
I think Dariush. Okay. Main event time. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't want to see Charles lose.
Well, don't watch then. just listen to the podcast again so you can listen to your version of events.
Yeah, I'll just close my eyes and pretend that's what actually happened.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Amanda Nunes against Irene Aldana. So, I've got my notes here, haven't I? 22-5 for Amanda Nunes, 14-6 for Irene Aldana. So, an inch height advantage for Aldana, an inch reach advantage for Nunes. 13 knockouts out of 22 wins for Nunes, with 4 submissions, 3 rear naked chokes, and a reverse triangle armbar. And on Aldana's side, 8 knockouts out of 14 wins. 3 wins by submission, 2 rear naked choke, and the basically reverse triangle armbar that she got Betch Kohea in.
Yeah.
Her legs were triangled and it was an armbar. It was kind of very similar. Now, just before we move on to anything else, I thought this was interesting because takedown defense, although it does look slightly different on... See, I've got UFC stats. I've got a different stats from the UFC for the show. And it lists them both as having 81% takedown defense. But he's like, there's a point in it. Like, Amanda Nunes is like 81.8% and Irene Aldana is 81.3% takedown defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why they've rounded up here. But interestingly, more people have tried to take Irene Aldana down than Nunes. She's had to deal with 54 takedown attempts compared to Nunes dealing with 34 takedown attempts.
Yeah, but do you think it's because Aldana is more like a... Like, you could tell she's a striker.
It's because Amanda Nunes takes people down. That's the big difference. Because then if you look at their takedown accuracy, Nunes is at 59% and Aldana's at 50%, but Aldana's only taken 2 people, only scored 2 takedowns.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 2 out of 4 attempts, whereas Nunes has scored 33 takedowns. So there's that's the reason why she's not being taken down as much is because she's been the one that's been grappling.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure.
But I just thought that was interesting. I also thought it was interesting that there's not much difference in the time between the fights.
Hmm.
Do you remember me talking about
this? Yeah, I remember you telling me.
Like, this is mad. So you've got... where are we? So Aldana's had 11 UFC fights.
Yep.
with one being 5 5-minute rounds. And Nunes has had 17 UFC fights with 11 being 5 5-minute rounds. And there's a difference in fight time of 13 minutes and 40 seconds in favor of Nunes. That's crazy, isn't it?
That's crazy.
Like 6 more UFC fights, and all of her, almost all of her fights have been 5 rounds, and she's only fought in less than 15 minutes more than Aldana total.
Yeah, but when she throws a punch at you,
yeah, well that's where the significant strikes are different as well. That's where the significant strikes are different as well, because Nunes is landing less significant strikes on the stats, but she's knocking more people out.
Yeah.
She's a scary individual. But I also feel like Aldana's got a lot of skills that she could bring to the table that could be problematic.
And she looks really, like, buff.
Yeah. You said she looked like she's
physically in really good shape, which I thought it was weird when they initially put Nunes versus Pena, because I thought Aldana was going to be the next one to fight. I thought it was already kind of set.
Yeah.
So when they changed it to Pena, I was a bit confused. But then they changed it to Aldana. But Aldana was preparing to fight a 5-round against Pennington.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe Pena had it written into a contract for an immediate rematch if she lost the belt, but she wasn't going to be ready. So they just scheduled it straight away.
I see. Yeah. Yeah, that could happen.
Maybe.
I don't think
they were good fights though. I'll be honest, they were good fights. That second fight was a really, really good performance from Nunes, and she showed a lot of new things in her game as well. Which, you know, like, because obviously I've been doing it for the breakdown show, which we're going to record tomorrow. And like Aldana, if you go back to her early fights, the Invicta fights with like Jessamine Duke and Colleen Schneider, like she looks like the same fighter that she is now. Like she's got the same skills, the same kind of boxing, same back-taking skills, same takedown offense, builds good frames, posts away with people. But she's gotten physically stronger. Like, you can see she's a better athlete now. She's grown into her frame, and she's just gotten, like, more refined at what she already did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, with Nunes, like, I feel like that second fight against Pena, we saw a lot of different things in her game and things that potentially could be problematic for Aldana, because she seems to have a real, real hard time against people with a southpaw. Like, she struggled with Holly Holm for 25 minutes. That was frustrating. When Macy Chasson was switching stances and going southpaw, it was problems for her as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like Nunes seeing that and thinking, well, I've always got the option just to switch stance and start using that check right hook that she landed. I mean, how many times did she knock down Pena? 4 or 5 times?
Yeah, a lot. And that was a huge difference, because it went from Amanda in the first fight just, you know, like charging at her like, I'm just going to knock you out, kind of like Cyborg did to her and getting clipped, to her being like, oh, no, I'm just going to let you come because I have the better striking.
Yeah.
And you get kind of like wingy reckless.
Yeah.
So and that's where I'm going to clip you. And I do have knockout power. And I just think it was the fact that she was getting like so many great knockouts and finishes that it kind of disorientated her from like, I guess like my goal is to win and not so much to go do spectacular things like everyone's expecting me. It was something that like Joaquin Buckley talked about, like after he did that knockout, it kind of disorientated him because he wanted to keep to recreate that.
Yeah.
And
I don't think like it's similar to what we were talking about earlier with Charles Oliveira. Like, you go Chandler, Poirier, Gaethje, Makhachev, and then Dariush. And he's probably not going to look at them in the same way. And, like, you look at Nunes and you go, well, she went, you know, well, I mean, how far down do you want to go? McMahon, Shevchenko, Tate, Rousey, Shevchenko, Pennington, Cyborg, Holm, Durandamy, and then two more fights up at featherweight to defend the belt, Felicia Spencer, Megan Anderson, and then came back down to fight Juliana Pena at bantamweight. I bet she's got nothing for me.
Yeah.
I would imagine she was really surprised, because it was like the first round she was hammering her with that low kick.
Mm-hmm.
Second round she came out and was just getting stuck into a brawl where, that like you were saying, that's where she's going to lose the fight, because Pena does start to front crawl a bit when she's striking, and Nunes doesn't need to play that game.
Yeah.
She can play that game and she can win it, but why play it if you don't need to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with that Holly Holm performance where she was playing on the outside. I love it. I mean, I've watched it a bunch of times today as I've been editing and stuff. And like just kind of keeps pulling her in that direction, and then keeps showing her that right hand as if she's gonna pitch it over the top. And you see Holly Holm kind of lingering on one leg, ready to jam that side kick in. It was a beautiful finish, a really good performance. And the kicking game of Nunes is going to be the most problematic thing for Aldana. Mm-hmm. Like, Aldana's got really good boxing, but there are certain things about her boxing which are kind of... They're good because they look technical, but they're not done with purpose, which means that they leave her vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, she does the little bob side to side, and sometimes she'll go figure of eight with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the times when she's getting caught with head kicks. And that was happening all the way back into her Invicta career. And Leslie Smith was doing it as well, seeing her slip side to side and head kicking her.
Yeah.
And like, it's one thing getting kicked in the head by Leslie Smith, but you get kicked in the head by Amanda Nunes and you probably won't know that the fight's been finished.
Yeah. With Nunes, it's just, it appears like as more fights have gone, the more she's looked at it it's sort of like a game plan fight IQ type of way. Like, I'm not just throwing shots at you. I'm intending to do something with it.
Yeah.
I've been teeing you up with something else in order to get this finish. And you can see that from her. And I do understand what you mean by Aldana. Because, like, if I see her striking, I'm like, that is Chris. That's, like, on pads, beautiful. And you see the comment, especially with the lead hand, she goes cross and then uppercut. Mm. And you could see that has been drilled over and over again. But I feel... like when she did with Holm, that she couldn't really cut her off. Or sometimes when she's getting pressured, that kind of goes like, ugh.
Yeah.
Because
I think that's partly, though, is the game plan that she got in there against Holly Holm didn't work. Like, Holly Holm was a lot more aggressive in that fight at times, and I don't think she expected that. I also think that Holly Holm did a good job of making her feel far away when she didn't want to be exchanging as well. And I don't feel like she had the ability to adapt. Like, say, for example, if Amanda Nunes had beaten Juliana Pena the first time,
mm-hmm.
and this was the first, and then now she's defending the belt against Aldana, like she could have done the same thing against Aldana. She could have underestimated her. She could have outstruck herself, overpunched herself, and left herself vulnerable, and then come back in the next time around with a new wrinkle in a game. And if she'd have showed up in the second fight against Aldana Southpaw, that would have really caused Aldana problems.
Yeah.
But because that's already happened and Aldana's already seen that, she's already going to be preparing for... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's less chance that she's going to have to shift much in her game plan because she's already seen that Nunes has got Southpaw striking.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was good as well. And it also opens up the option for the head kick as well from the opposite stance, like it was against Holly Holm.
Yeah.
You know, it's
I just, like, after seeing, like, the Macy Chasson fight.
Yeah.
It's just, in that first round, like, she looked really good. Also, I don't see her being as comfortable once she gets, like, let's say a knockdown to go towards the ground. Like, versus Gianna Santos, she was kind of, like, struggling with the legs. Like, she was like, get out of my way.
That body shot that she landed was lovely, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she was doing it against Vanessa Mello. She, like, dips off to the side and digs in the body. But then she did it against Gianna Santos, hit her in the body, and then the next time Santos was coming forward, she postured like Canelo does.
Mm-hmm.
Postured as if she's going to the body and then came up to the head, and that's when she dropped her. That was really slick. She's like, and the, you know, the gazelle hook against Caitlin Vieira.
Yeah.
You know, she'd been jabbing to the body. You can see Caitlin Vieira parry a body shot as she's getting knocked out. I think she's got really good striking. I feel like if, like, Nunes has had that scare against Pena now, so she's not going to be coming in, like, half-hearted and not prepared.
Yeah, because I felt like Nunes was just looking into fighting Kayla Harrison.
Yeah.
In that fight.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I'm just going to get over Juliana Pena so I can
yeah.
So I can make some money against Kayla Harrison, because that's the next big, like, cyborg type of fight.
Yeah.
That's going to, you know, elevate you. And, yeah, shit happens, and that's kind of why we love the sport. I feel like Aldana is going to be a lot more enthusiastic because Alexa Grasso won.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Yair winning the interim title, you have Brandon being the champion, and they've all been friends forever.
Yeah.
They've all, like, been, you know, since they like kind of started together and have been training. You see photos of them from, you know, before phones had good resolution. It's it's just kind of like the story. It's like the Fantastic Four. And,
yeah, yeah.
And that is going to really help, I feel, elevate her emotionally and spiritually fighting. But I just feel like Nunes is going to take her down.
Yeah.
And then just flatten her out, kind of like what Chasson was doing to her in the second round. It was just, and Chasson is very, very good. I don't feel like she gets enough credit for how good she actually is.
She's for sure. But do you think she would do any better than Megan Anderson did against Nunes, though? Macy Chasson. I was thinking about this earlier today. Like, I think Nunes cracks Macy Chasson and then chokes her out. I don't think it's much different to the Megan Anderson fight.
Yeah. No, yeah, I see what you mean. And also with Nunes, you have the... I see a little bit, especially when a champion has been champion for a while, there's this like extra layer that you have to get over to fight them. You know, like this establishment of them as champion. Where
but then is that changed though because she's just lost to Peña? Like she's, and the thing is, the last fight as well against Peña, like she was still bruised up. She still took a few shots. Like the thing that Peña does well is, although she does kind of front crawl a bit, because as she's front crawling, she shifts her head from one side to the next. Sometimes she'll split punches. So there were times when Nunes was leaning in for a shot and she was getting caught down the pipe with something else. And Aldana does that really well.
Yeah.
Like she's really good at splitting punches. She's very good at reading what's coming in her direction and countering. So like there is, like I would say from watching the Peña fights, even the last one where she was, you know, scoring takedowns and landing wicked elbows on the floor, I would still think that Aldana's thinking, I can outstrike her. I have better striking than Peña. I feel like Aldana would have a decent shot of beating Peña.
Yeah, no, but I do agree. I think Aldana's striking is really beautiful, really crisp, especially when it comes to boxing. And I've seen her like crack pads, like it is loud.
Yeah.
And it's when she started off in the UFC, it was a little bit like not what people expected her to do, because she started off with two losses.
Yeah.
But then she'd only been doing MMA for like 6 years. You know, it's not.
And she was finishing people first round outside of the UFC as
well. Yeah. And
like,
I remember
she did have
seeing
that fourth round fight against Tonya Evinger, which I haven't seen for a while, to be honest. I should watch that one again. Evan just incredibly tough. So just to go to the fourth round with her is impressive. But then like the next two fights against Duke and Van Duyn, they were both really, really strong performances, first round finish. Then you get Leslie Smith in your UFC debut, and Smith just walked her down. And like this is my concern for her with Nunes. Like, because we know Nunes will walk you down and she can be aggressive, she might see that and go, I've just got to put her on her back foot, because she's not as effective. Even like against Pudilova, where she won a split decision, the reason why it was a split decision is because Pudilova was moving forward and bullying her at times. Like she was countering her with low kicks as Pudilova was stepping forward, but it took like a round and a half for it to start wearing on her. And I don't know if she'll have the same kind of success against Nunes, even if Nunes is being reckless and walking her down. I would like to see her invest in the body. And I would like to see her work the lead leg of Nunes, even if it's just to negate that forward pressure. But she's the more space she's got, the better, Nunes. Sorry, Aldana.
Yeah.
And if she starts getting clinched and tied up, she's just going to be burning energy that I don't think she wants to be burning. I'm actually quite stuck on this one, because I can go one way and then the other. I'm going to go with Nunes just purely based on her experience and that performance, that last performance against Peña. Showing southpaw striking, showing the ability to take down and control, really nice elbows on the inside.
And that was right after she moved and just created her own gym.
Yeah.
Because she was like, I'm done with ATT, and she went on, created her own gym. And I remember Peña being like, all right, dude, you're going to have a rematch and you're just going to like leave your gym that has, you know, raised your level up so much. And she looked great. She just looked very smart during the fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the point where I'm leaning towards Nunes. Is one, she has a an reach advantage, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Plus the fact that
only an inch though.
Yeah. But if you add the fact that she throws a punch like she gonna take your head off.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an extra 5 inches.
Yeah, those shots that she was winging past the guard against Peña.
It goes from like this to that, especially because Aldana is so correct. Mm-hmm. She's so clean and correct with her shots that sometimes she'll be guarded and it's the correct thing to do. But Pen Nunez would just throw it so much that it'll catch you.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah.
Yeah, and we have seen Aldana hurt. You know, she was rocked against Leslie Smith. She had to backtrack a minute. I'm going with Nunes, but I would be pleasantly surprised because I do think Aldana is probably one of the better technical strikers in all the women's divisions.
Yeah,
for sure.
Me too.
I do like watching it. Like that finish against Jessamyn Duke. It was just clean. It's just like bat, 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 and then she keeps this hand chambered while she's punching her instead of getting wild and reckless. Yeah, I don't know, just maybe a bit too much at the moment with Nunes. I'm going with Nunes.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah?
Wild card.
Wow.
Aldana, if you're just going to bet on something crazy, like something, you got an extra £5.
Go on.
Aldana by submission.
No. Aldana by spinning back fist or spinning elbow. That is one of the most consistent things in her game. Spinning elbows, spinning back fists.
Yeah.
I've included one in the breakdown show that she lands against Pudilova as she's crashing forward. Mm-hmm. That was a spinning elbow. But she used a lot, even against Leslie Smith, spinning elbows, spinning back fists.
Yeah, she did.
I could see her throwing something like that and just cuffing Amanda Nunes on the top of the head and her legs going. Jumping on her back, choking her out with a broken forearm.
That's still a submission,
oh,
though.
Oh, shit, imagine that. Yeah.
That would still be me winning. You didn't say go on then, so you could tell me I was wrong.
Yeah, okay, but the submission would never happen without my wild card of a spinning attack.
Okay, but end result.
Okay, so...
You don't go to bet and go, she's going to do this before she does that. It's end result, what's going to happen.
Okay. So wild card's a submission.
Wild card's a submission for...
After being dropped by a spinning attack.
All right, yeah, there we go.
Okay, right. Thank you very much for watching. Make sure you check out our sponsors, Outlaw Rum. Make sure you check out Outlaw Rum. It is fantastic. It is delicious. That's the way you finish your day. And this is the way you start your day. AG1, Athletic Greens. Go to athleticgreens.com/outlawed and you'll get 5 free travel packs. You'll get a year's free supply of vitamin D and K2. It's amazing stuff. You'll love it. And at the end of the day, cheers. Enjoy the fights.
Like.
Subscribe. And we'll see you next time.